This is Fresh Air. I'm Dave Davies, sitting in for Terry Gross. For a different perspective on the conditions at Guantanamo Bay and the legal status of its detainees, we turn to the U.S. government's chief counsel there. Captain Pat McCarthy is staff judge advocate for the U.S. Task Force Guantanamo Bay, Cuba. He's been at Guantanamo since May of 2006. He spoke to us from his office on the base. Well, Captain McCarthy, welcome to Fresh Air. Let's discuss some of the allegations that Clive Stafford Smith makes in his book based on his experiences representing detainees at Guantanamo. One of the things he says in this book is that 5 years after they were brought to Guantanamo, fewer than one half of detainees have actually met a lawyer. Does that sound right to you?
I don't think so. I think that right now we have about 300 or so detainees that are represented by counsel. All of the detainees have been advised of their right to meet with counsel. All of the detainees have been advised of their right under the Detainee Treatment Act to challenge their combatant status review tribunal. This year alone, my office has facilitated nearly 1,100. That's 1,100 lawyer visits. That's lawyers here on the ground. So I understand what Mr. Smith is saying, but I just have to say that it certainly doesn't bear out here with my office and the things that we undertake every single day.
Okay, so everyone has been advised of their right to see a lawyer. I mean, I don't want to split hairs here, but have they been able to get one? I mean, do they have access to them? Have they actually met one?
Absolutely right. Yes, we had put into place an arrangement with the American Bar Association to represent those detainees who had requested to have attorneys assigned to challenge their combatant status review tribunals. We have the detainees talk among themselves. They are aware of their own lawyers. There are multiple mechanisms by which detainees who would like to have a lawyer can get a lawyer.
Okay. One of the things that Clive Stafford Smith says that there are obstacles to lawyers establishing trust with detainees, and one of them is that it appears that all of the detainees have been told all their lawyers are Jewish, and one of his clients said that he'd been told that his lawyer likes to have sex with men. Have you come across anything like that?
I haven't. In fact, okay. I don't know how to respond to that. That's a kind of a naked allegation with no basis in terms of any kind of documentary evidence or anything. I mean, it's difficult for me to prove a negative.
Sure.
But I can say that we have never seen any evidence of that. We have looked into it because those allegations have been made, and we do look into these sorts of allegations. So it's not as if we haven't spoken to intelligence-gathering personnel, the interrogators and so forth. It's not as if we haven't looked at the records. But we have found nothing which would indicate to us that that is the case.
Okay.
So
one of the other things that that Clive Stafford Smith indicated was a problem was the military censorship. And obviously this is there are a lot of needs for maintaining the security of sensitive information in an operation like yours. But he says that when he meets with an attorney, with a client at a detainee, he's allowed to take notes, but he's not allowed to then take the notes with him. They're placed in an envelope and then mailed by military personnel to Washington, where he has to get them. Is that right? And what would be the basis for that procedure?
Yeah, Clive Stafford Smith knows, what we do here is all attorney visits are governed by what's called a protective order. The majority of counsel visit their clients here under a protective order that was put into place by the U.S. District Court for the District of Washington, D.C. That protective order requires that counsel who meet with their detainees treat those documents as classified documents until they can be reviewed to ensure there's no classified information in them if counsel seek to have them released publicly. So if counsel want to take them back to their offices and so forth. When he refers to military censorship, that simply is not accurate. His notes are placed into an envelope and mailed to Washington as any other classified document would be. Military personnel are not allowed to carry classified documents about. So those documents are mailed to Washington, D.C., and they're mailed to an organization called the Privilege Team. The Privilege Team is a team that works for the court security officers, or CSOs, and that privilege team, they are the ones who look at any documents. The privilege team is bound not to release any attorney-client privileged information to the government. So it's an internal process that facilitates the attorney's ability to come down and speak with their clients. All attorneys have to agree to the protective order before they come down to Guantanamo. So if Mr. Clive Stafford Smith or others have difficulty with the protective order, their opportunity to object to the protective order was present at the time they signed it. They could have litigated it and taken it up through the Supreme Court, as other cases have been done. He chose to sign it and agree to it, and that's what we follow here.
We're speaking with Captain Pat McCarthy. He is the government's lead counsel at Guantanamo Bay, Cuba. Well, you know, one of the questions that's raised, I think, in Clive Stafford's book overall is whether a large number of detainees at Guantanamo perhaps shouldn't have been there. I mean, I think it's understood a lot of people would expect that in a chaotic environment such as the U.S. action in Afghanistan, a lot of people were captured, and I think most people would expect that the great majority of those captured were clearly enemy combatants or involved in terrorist activity or something like that. But he seems to suggest that a great many, probably a majority, might even have been mistakenly captured. And one of the ways, of course, that is reviewed by the U.S. military are these combatant status review tribunals, which are, if I understand this correctly, held to determine whether an individual detainee should be kept. Is that right?
Not precisely. We've heard this claim before that, obviously, that we have swept up people on the battlefield and they made their way to Guantanamo. Just to sort of go through the process, the first thing that happens on the battlefield is there's an assessment made as to who the individual is at the time that they're brought into U.S. custody. Thousands of individuals are temporarily detained by the U.S. military in connection with military operations. A fraction of those that are initially detained are actually held for any longer-term period. A fraction of those that are held for a longer-term period come into sort of a moderate term period of detention, and a fraction of those made their way to Guantanamo. So the fact of the matter is that the Department of Defense has had an ongoing process to validate the identity and the affiliations of individuals who come into our detention. Now, with respect to the combatant status review tribunals,
well, can I just interrupt you on that particular point, Captain? I mean, Clive Stafford Smith's book cites an analysis done by Mark Denbaugh of the Seton Hall Law School, which concluded that 95% of those at Guantanamo were not actually captured by U.S. forces, but were turned over by Pakistanis and Northern Alliance forces in Afghanistan, many of whom were responding to cash bounties that were available to turn over suspicious people. And I guess that surprised me, if it's true. It seemed as if I sort of suspected that most of the folks at Guantanamo had been captured by U.S. forces in Afghanistan. Is it not the case that the great majority were actually turned over to U.S. forces, often by people collecting a bounty?
The Denbaugh study is based upon unclassified information that was released in connection with the CSERTs, or the Combatant Status Review Tribunals, back in 2005. It is flawed. It is based on less than half of the available information. West Point has done a counter study, and the West Point study contradicted a vast majority of the findings of the Denbaugh study. And the West Point study had access to, because it was a government-run study, had access to greater information than the Denbaugh study had. The fact is, yes, there were a proportion of individuals that were captured by Pakistanis. These were individuals who had come out of Tora Bora and had slipped across the Pakistani border and were trying to get out of Pakistan and back to their home countries. There were also a certain number of individuals where there were rewards paid with respect to those that were brought forward by villagers and so forth and so on. It is a relatively small number of people that had that in cases where rewards were paid, and the fact of the matter is that the majority of individuals who are in Guantanamo were captured in Afghanistan by U.S. or coalition forces. Now, because I do have this opportunity, I would say that the American people, I believe, would expect that the U.S. would not stop at the Afghan-Pakistan border and simply throw up their hands and say, well, they got away. In addition to the individuals who were not captured in Afghanistan, is Khalid Sheikh Mohammed. He wasn't captured in Afghanistan, and numerous others. And the fact is that we did take individuals from various areas in and around Afghanistan. We brought them in, and then we did the same thing as I described previously, where we went through, we validated the identity of the individual, the affiliation of the individual, and that individual's activities. And it's through that validation process that we are comfortable that we, in fact, do have individuals that warrant detention in Guantanamo Bay.
Well, let's talk a little bit about the process by which their status is reviewed. That's the Combatant Status Review Tribunals. And again, this is not a trial for a crime. This is a review in part to determine whether they indeed have a status that would require their retention at Guantanamo. Tell us a little bit about what happens there. Do the detainees in these proceedings get to look at, are they informed of evidence against them? Are they represented by anyone?
They're not represented. And to back up, what the Combatant Status Review Tribunals are essentially a process by which the initial battlefield determination of enemy combatancy is confirmed. So it doesn't actually determine that an individual is an enemy combatant. It confirms that the individual is an enemy combatant. So what happens there is the tribunal sits, the tribunal considers information which the U.S. government holds on a particular individual. The detainee is granted access to unclassified information that may pertain to him. He's also given an unclassified summary of information that that is developed off of classified information. There is an individual called a personal representative that assists the detainee in preparation of his general response to the factual predicate that the U.S. government is using to confirm that the individual is an enemy combatant. What happens is that the CSRT, the tribunal itself, is required to look at all information, both information that would indicate the individual is an enemy combatant, as well as information that would indicate he is not, or would indicate somehow or undermine the case against the detainee. The tribunal takes all of that into account as it makes its determination as to whether the initial finding is correct. So in terms of its confirmation of that earlier battlefield assessment that an individual is an enemy combatant.
And is the detainee allowed to address the tribunal in these proceedings?
The detainee is allowed to address the tribunal, and the detainee is allowed to call witnesses that are reasonably available.
Well, when detainees are eventually tried for crimes, I guess the venue is these military commissions. There was one set of commissions which I guess was struck down by the courts, and then Congress last year authorized a new process for establishing military commissions to try detainees. Is that right, Captain?
That's correct. The Military Commissions Act was struck down by the Supreme Court in the Hamdan case, and Congress passed the new Military Commissions Act in December of 2006.
Okay. What will happen with the rest of the 300 or so detainees at Guantanamo?
Well, the current projections are there will be somewhere in the order of 50 or 60 or so prosecutions for individuals who have committed war crimes. And then whatever occurs out of that, individuals may or may not be sentenced. If they're found guilty, they'll be sentenced to some sentence, and they'll serve their sentences. Others may not be charged. Others are being held as enemy combatants, consistent with the law of war, which permits countries to hold enemy combatants till the end of hostilities. Now, I've got to tell you that I've been asked, well, how long will that be? And my response, not being flippant, is I don't know, you're asking the wrong guy. We didn't start the war. It was begun on the 11th of September, and some would argue well before that. And we are not in a situation where we can control the ending of the war. In fact, I think that the troublesome part is, I think everyone understands that we don't know who is in a position to control the ending of the war, unlike a traditional war where you have a government that surrenders. So for those who are not prosecuted, they will either be transferred back to their home country with some sort of assurance that they will not again present a threat to the United States, or they will be detained in accordance with the law of war.
Do you see the war on terror coming to an end?
I think that everyone has to ask that question. Philadelphia was spared on the 11th of September, thank God, from what occurred on that terrible day. And I think what all Americans have to think through is, do we think it can happen again? What's the best way to avoid it from happening again? It's far too comfortable for commentators such as yourself to ask me why it's my problem. It's not my problem. You know, it's America's problem. I was at the Pentagon the day it burned. I was there. And I had friends that died in that facility. And you know, I think those in New York understand it, but their memory's probably fading as well. This is a question for the American people. How are we going to detain guys who we pick up, who we know to be threats? That's a big question. It's a big issue. Should we bring them to the United States? Should we set them free? Should we give them a little stipend and thank them for their job? Maybe they can come back and do a better job next time. I don't know what it is, but this is not a question only for the military. Iraq, that might be a question for the military and for those families that have loved ones overseas. But the war on terror on September the 11th, it became a question for all Americans, and every American's got to ask that question. And they've got to bear the responsibility for the outcome of their answer.
Well, Kevin, I wanted to talk a little bit about interrogation techniques. And Clive Stafford Smith says his clients tell him that they have been beaten at Guantanamo. What kinds of interrogation techniques are permitted there? I mean, is waterboarding, for example, but putting someone underwater, stress positions,
absolutely
that kind
not.
Of thing?
In 2006, in the fall of 2006, the Army Field Manual was amended to very clearly state the interrogation techniques that are authorized around the world. There are misperceptions about what has occurred in Guantanamo. We have had major investigations. We have never had a case where torture has been uncovered here in Guantanamo. Now, with that, I want to say that there were issues of overzealous interrogators in the early part of the mission here, and that is clearly unfortunate. But in today's way of that we do business here, all interrogations are done by what's called direct approach. And direct approach is the interrogator asks the detainee a direct question, and the detainee either responds or doesn't respond. There is no sanction whatsoever for a detainee declining to respond. In order to build rapport with detainees, interrogators will often take in food items. So we have Subway here. Many of the detainees like Subway sandwiches, so the interrogators take in Subway sandwiches. We have a Pizza Hut here. The interrogators take in pizza. And chewing tobacco is a very hot item here among the detainees who speak with their interrogators. Cigarettes and other sorts of what we call incentive items are available to interrogators who speak with detainees. But there, you know, these depictions of ham-fisted attempts to get detainees to speak simply are not a part of any kind of contemporary reality.
You said there were some issues with overzealous interrogations early in the history of Guantanamo, but wasn't it early last year that a report done for the UN Committee Against Torture concluded that the treatment of detainees amounted to torture at Guantanamo?
Well, I don't know. I'm not familiar with the exact findings of that report or the conditions that they looked upon. I don't know what that is. I can tell you what the conditions are here today. Every single detainee has the ability to speak with all detainees around him 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. All detainees have a minimum of 2 hours of recreation each day. That's outside recreation. When they're in recreation, they have the ability to talk to detainees that are in adjacent recreation areas. A large proportion of the detainees live in a communal camp setting, which means that they get to talk to other detainees all day long, and they get to interact face-to-face and have robust social interaction all day with up to 15 or 20 detainees at a time. We serve 3 meals per day with up to 5,000 calories total in the meals. All of the detainees have prayer beads, prayer rugs, Qurans. All the detainees are allowed to pray 5 times a day. All of the detainees are allowed to pray uninterrupted by the guard staff. In fact, we put cones out with a P on the cone to indicate that it's prayer time, so that the guards keep any extraneous noise to an absolute minimum, and we don't do movements of detainees during the prayer period. So I'm not sure what the United Nations found to be torture, but those are the conditions, and if those are the conditions they found to be torture, then I just have to say I'm not sure I agree with their definition of that term. And I think, in fact, that loose definitions of that term undermine the seriousness of that claim. I think it's important to remember that Mr. Smith is an attorney representing his clients, interested in getting his clients out of Guantanamo. So while I'm not saying that all of Mr. Smith's claims should be dismissed, I am saying that these claims should be appropriately viewed, and there should be a balanced approach to the claims that are brought up.
Fair enough. Captain, is there anything else that you'd like to say?
Well, I would like to say, the final thing I'd like to say is that I think that Guantanamo has been painted as a place where individuals are sent, they're held incognito, they lack access to courts, they lack access to right to family members and so forth. The media is held out of Guantanamo. And there generally is this cone is lowered over the facility. And nothing could be further from the truth. The fact is, as I said earlier, we've had almost 1,100 lawyer visits this year. We had about 900 lawyer visits last year, about the same the year before. We've had well over 500 media visits this year. We had about 1,000 last year. We currently have multiple cases at the United States Supreme Court. We have many more cases at the U.S. Circuit Court for the Circuit of Washington, D.C. We have many more than that at the District Court for the District of Washington, D.C. The fact of the matter is we are trying to hold, on behalf of the American people, individuals who pose a threat to the United States, a serious threat to the United States. And we are trying to do that in a way that is humane and safe for the staff and for the individuals that we hold. I just want to leave you with that and your listeners with that, and I really appreciate the opportunity to speak with you today.
Well, Captain, thank you so much for joining us.
You too. Bye-bye.
Captain Pat McCarthy is the U.S. government's lead counsel in Guantanamo Bay, Cuba.